Welcome to episode 374 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 16th of April 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at 12 p.m. Melbourne time. Rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the Tech Webcast iPhone app and Android app. Your hosts for today are Brad, Jacob, and myself, Daryl. Our guests are Alice Chase and John Kennedy.
Hi, this is Paul Carey from Carey Co. Check out our latest game release, Alley Cat, on iOS and Android. And check out our website at careyco.net. Now I hand you back to Brad and the team at Tech Webcast.
Tech Webcast, streamed from our brains to our mouths, to your ears, to your brain. It's like our brains are holding hands, brain hands. That doesn't really make sense, but Tech Webcast does. Tech stuff, gadgets, games. Come and wander around geek heaven with us. Tech Webcast, here, now. Holding brain hands.
Hello, Brad.
Hello, Daryl. How are you, mate?
Good, good. I remember that. I remember that from that intro from, well, I think, one of the first Tech Webcasts I ever listened to. It had that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good done. Way back in the day.
Well done, well done. Yeah, I actually found that. I'd actually dug that up the other day in my hard drive. But I would give it a play.
A blast from the past.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And also, I've uploaded another episode from about 6 years ago, so that's on SoundCloud.
Yeah, no, actually, I'll have a listen to that. It's interesting because if particularly that time frame, anything we were talking about, you were talking about in technology, we wanted to see did it come true, or were you right off the beam, or did it just, you know, how did it change in 6 years, mm-hmm. which is like 60 years for other sectors.
Definitely. How's your week been, Daryl?
Nothing really exciting. Busy week at work, and still practicing for our play, which opens on the 14th of May. Cozzy, okay. Lewin Arrows play Cozzy, and just today it's a very gloomy day here. We've got fuel reduction burns going on in the bush, and so the sky is full of smoke, so it's very smoky in that outside at the moment. So
what is that exactly? What is that?
What happens is after the fire season is closed, and once you know it's safe to do so, and before the winter rains come and make the fact that you can't burn, it used to be the old Forest Commission, but whatever the government department is name is these days, they go up into the Crown Land, into the bush, and they burn it. Not as in the huge bushfires, but they burn, and the fires creep along under the trees and everything. Burns all the fuel, like leaves that are dropped, all that sort of stuff, because otherwise, if you don't do it, the fuel load builds up and builds up and builds up, and when you do get the inevitable forest fire, it burns much hotter and is much more dangerous. Yeah. So each autumn they go up there, but it's a tough gig, because if the rains come too early, they can't burn. If it's too dry, they can't burn because it's too dangerous. And so there's this window of opportunity, which can sometimes only be 3 or 4 weeks. They've got to get up there and get it done, because if we get heavy rain, then the bush gets too wet and it won't burn. And already I've got a cousin that works there. The nights are getting cooler here, and it's very hard to light the fires when it's dewy at night. And so he's saying that even then, he was telling me the other day that even then it's difficult. It's becoming difficult to do it. So yeah, but anyway, it's one of our annual things, is that you get a bit smoky this time of year.
Just don't sniff the smoke too much.
Exactly, that's right. Yeah, it's like you smoked a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. Jacob, do you smoke cigarettes, or how's your week been? Sorry, that was a random question. How's your week been, mate?
Hey, Brad.
What, I'm joking. Sorry. Go ahead. Well, how's your week been, mate?
All right. The closest to that is staying outside a couple months ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. They are doing some brush fire testing out about 2 miles away, and it was very windy out.
Yeah, right.
And my week was awesome.
And your week was good?
Yes, it was awesome.
Good stuff, mate. Good to hear. Good to hear. Let's go to Alice. Welcome, Alice, to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
How's your week been? Anything exciting happened to you?
Oh, it's been a good week. Not anything terribly exciting. No fires here.
Okay.
You know, we have a small fire pit in the backyard, but nothing like that.
Okay. Oh, all right. Let's go to John. Welcome, John, to the podcast. What is that noise?
Thanks for having me.
How's your week been, mate?
It's been great. It's been a really busy week, actually. Just about to release first version of our software, what we're building at the moment, Lightning. So we're getting pretty excited now.
Good stuff, mate. I can't wait to hear more about it. Jake, what happened on Friday? Where do I go on Friday? Mention it.
You went to the place called ACMI.
ACMA.
Yes.
And Daryl, you also went there as well, mate. Do you want to get a quick brief on what it is? They show like...
ACMA's the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, and it's based in Melbourne. And it really gives you a hands-on look. It's like of the development of the moving image in Australia from, you know, late in the 19th century right through to, you know, modern video streaming and that we do today and so on, and everything in between. So if you're interested in the moving image and you're interested in seeing how it evolved, and it's more like hands-on, you get to actually look at the, you know, like the CineSound cameras that they used during World War II, or and you get to see some clips of very historic old documentaries, even things, and there's old gaming terminals and various other things. So if you're old like me, they're a blast from the past. But if you're younger, you can look and see what your parents might have been playing on gaming terminals there 40 years ago. But yeah, it really is. And I have other exhibitions running there at different times. So that's
good. Jacob, what did you think of it? I showed you on FaceTime. What did you think of it?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I saw you tried to play some Mario.
Yeah, it was good. It was quite fun. It was unbelievable how old that is. And it's quite interesting.
And it's hands-on, so it's not just a museum where everything's under glass and you just stand there and look at it. You can actually interact with some of the... So it's an interactive... it's really interesting. So if you're in Melbourne and you haven't seen it, or you're going to Melbourne, definitely look it up, because it's free. And I think you'll be quite surprised, and even if you're older like me, some of the programs playing there, you'll remember them from your youth.
Yeah, definitely.
And I still have a little bit to go on.
Yep, go ahead.
Well, I saw you trying to play the Nintendo 64. I was telling you, put the phone down. You need to use two hands instead of one.
I realize that, but I was just showing you, mate. You know, I didn't really want to get into playing. I was showing you, but...
I got the remote on my desk anyway.
You do indeed.
My computer.
You indeed. All right, is that what you want to say, Jacob?
Yeah. Hey, really, Brad, if you really want to get into it, just try some wrestling games on the Nintendo 64.
Okay. Alice, do you get into much gaming at all?
I do. I play some with my younger son. He does more... Minecraft and things like
Cool. All right. On the Xbox, or what Xbox, or what console does he have?
Yeah, Xbox.
Oh, nice. Okay, Xbox is a great deal. I love the Xbox. And what about you, John? Do you get much into gaming at all, mate?
I used to be a gamer a long time ago now. Now I think the best I do is playing iPad games with my little son.
Okay.
Or probably a couple of iOS games.
Yep. I really love games on the new Apple TV. I love the Apple TV, and there's so many good games on there to play and try out and stuff. It's just very, very good.
I actually created a Steam account. Actually this week, because I thought I wanted to play. I mean, I'm a big Skyrim fan, and I wanted to play Skyrim, but I wanted to play it and add mods to it. But that's one thing you can't do on the Xbox, is you can't add like mods to a game like Skyrim. So yeah, I set up a Steam account. And downloaded Skyrim, and I just play it on the notebook here, but I'll have a play around with some of the mods when I get a chance. But that was a very painless operation.
Nice one. Have you ever tried what's that streaming website called, Jacob?
Which one are you talking about?
What's that one you call you can broadcast and play games and stuff? What's that one? I forgot the name of it. Yeah, Twitch. Have you tried out Twitch, Daryl?
I've watched. Yeah, I've watched gaming stuff on Twitch. Yeah, one of the guys that I sort of follow that does YouTube videos, he does a live stream. Yep. Occasionally on Twitch. I don't sit up because again it's the middle of the night here, but I tend to go over to his Twitch channel at different times, and he's just got the raw video of his stream up, and so sometimes you can just sit there and watch what went on before he cuts it up and puts it into YouTube chunks. But yeah, no, Twitch is good. It's interesting to know whether, you know, Google has eaten into Twitch, you know, with its live gaming, or you know, through yeah. YouTube. But at the moment, Twitch looks like it's still going going gangbusters.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, let's get into the news, and then we'll come back and have a chat with John and Alice. Here we go.
And here's some news for this week. The first one's actually a sort of a plug, if you like, too, for an app in the iTunes store called Pocket Weather Australia. And it's an Adelaide company, Shifty Jelly Proprietary Limited, and they've just had a major upgrade to their Pocket Weather Australia app. So if you're into not wanting to know what the weather is, definitely grab a copy of Pocket Weather app from the iTunes store. We will have the iTunes link in the show notes, so you can definitely jump across there. And I think Brad's a big Pocket Weather Australia app user. The next story comes from Mac Rumors, and it's Apple launches Safari technology preview browser for web developers. Apple today launched Safari technology preview, a new version of its web browser aimed specifically at developers. Safari technology preview is aimed at giving developers a way to access new web technologies Apple is planning to implement in iOS and OS X, offering an early look at new development tools, layout technologies, visual effects, and more. According to TechCrunch, Apple's goal with Safari Technologies Preview is to gather feedback from developers on its browser development ahead of launch through a method that's more easily accessible for WebKits. And Safari Technologies Preview can be run side by side with the existing Safari browser and is able to be set as a default browser on a machine. It includes local data stores for history, bookmarks, cookies and cache, and it supports syncing of browsing history and bookmarks over iCloud visually. The Safari Technology Preview icon is designed to resemble a Safari icon, but it is purple in colour instead of blue. And the next one we have is from Slashdot. iOS 1970 bug is back, can be exploited via rogue Wi-Fi networks. An anonymous reader writes, back in February, iOS users noted that setting your phone tablet date to January 1st, 1970 would permanently brick their devices. After Apple fixed the issue in iOS 9.3.1, two security researchers have now uploaded a video on YouTube showing how to exploit this bug from a remote location with no access to the user's phone. The setup involved attackers putting up a Wi-Fi network on which they are running a rogue NTP server. This server tells iOS devices syncing their time that it's December 31st, 1969, 23.59, so just before midnight. 20 minutes later, if the battery didn't catch fire, which is possible with the new exploit, the iPad or iPhone device is permanently and irreversibly bricked. So, yuck, if you got back to 1969, I can remember 1969. And that's the news.
You forgot one story.
Oh, did I forget one? What one? What? What did I forget? Apple launches Safari.
What did you forget, Jacob?
So, would you like me to do it?
Software safeguard coming to protect. Here it is. I must have missed clicking on the link. Software safeguard coming to protect against potentially dangerous USB-C. And that, again, is from Mac Rumors, so my apologies. The USB Implementers Forum, USB /IF today announced the launch of the USB Type-C authentication specification, a software protocol that will serve as a line of defense against USB-C products from non-compliant USB-C cables that are potentially able to damage the device. With USB Type-C authentication software, computers and other devices with USB-C ports will be able to confirm the authenticity of the USB device or USB charger, verifying elements like certification status and power flow, along with ensuring no malware is present. The USB Type-C authentication specification comes after some non-compliant USB-C cables were able to damage electronic devices. Google engineer Benson Luing spent weeks testing USB-C cables sold by Amazon after a third-party cable he bought destroyed his Chromebook Pixel, ouch, making it a mission to highlight the risks of non-compliant cables. Luing's work led Amazon to ban 30 third-party retailers from offering USB-C cables that do not adhere to the standard specifications issued by the USBIF, and it's also led to the creation of the protections announced today. So I think take two, I think that's the news.
That is the news. Thank you, Daryl, and thank you to Jacob for catching that one. That error.
You're welcome.
Always good at spotting errors in the podcast. Let's go to Alice first. Alice, do you have any views in them stories at all?
I think that the one that is most concerning is the iOS 1970 bug. That that is what's most intriguing to me.
Okay. Anything else?
Anything else?
I think that's really what struck me the most about the news this week. As my initial thought that
okay, it looks like Alice has any more views.
Well,
I'm sorry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Okay, sorry. I think my connection was cutting out there for a moment.
Oh, really? Yeah, are you?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Yeah.
Okay, perfectly. Yep. Okay, great.
Okay, let's go to John. John, any views on them stories?
I find the USB-C security standard really fascinating, actually. I think it's the pet kind of tech hacker, I don't know how to say it, but kind of in films and TV at the moment, everyone going around with USBs enacting craziness, and it always seems like a bit of a laugh, you know,
yep.
Going in and plugging a USB into a supercomputer and suddenly you've hacked the whole thing. Yep. But here's actually a real exploit, like something that they're actually having to cover because there's a real risk that you can actually hack the machine through USB-C. So that's kind of funny.
Cool. Good answer, mate. Anything else, John, you want to mention, mate?
I think mobile is going to be the kind of – you're talking a story about you're saying what was it, the story about the you're saying Firefox development, weren't you? The Safari story. I yep. think at the moment, there's a real rush by Apple to kind of hold developers and hold credibility while they seem to be slipping a little bit. It's still, I walk through the office and everyone's using a Mac, but they're going to have to keep innovating over the next couple of years as Microsoft has really turned towards open source and seems to be getting some of their developer cred back, you know, and also supports Linux in their cloud and has a lot of initiatives. So I think Apple's really going to have to without the help of Steve Jobs, unfortunately, who kind of I think was really the superstar and led the whole show. You know, they're going to have to do a lot of work to keep up.
Interesting. All right, thanks, John, for the anything else, John, you mentioned. Is that it?
No, it's fine.
All right, cool. That's cool, mate. Good stuff, mate. Let's go to Jacob. What about you, mate?
Oh, I found something else alongside this.
Yeah, what?
For Mac, they're going to be renaming the iOS back to Mac OS.
Yeah, I've seen that the other day. I already read about that.
Yeah, it's from Boing Boing. They're talking about it.
What's your view on them stories, mate?
Okay. The USB-C, I would never go up that high. I would stay with USB 3.0, not 3.1, because you got more issues to look for with the USB-C cables. Might be faster, but you might damage your system, like it was announced in the news story.
Yep.
And the 1970 bug, you thought it was squashed? It wasn't.
So and how did they fix it then? Why did it come back? How did it come back?
Yeah, it's because of the rogue Wi-Fi. Someone, you can log into a rogue Wi-Fi. It's like a man-in-the-middle attack.
Ah, okay.
So in other words, it's a bad server.
Interesting, okay.
So you log in and try to sync your time, and it'll blow up your battery and stuff like that.
Okay. You should work at Apple then, Jacob. Any other views, Jacob, you want to mention at all, mate?
The Safari sounds pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, I wish they still had it on Windows, but they killed that.
Would you use Safari if it was on Windows?
It was on Windows.
Did you ever use it?
It was. They only stopped at version 5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if I tried to use it, they said don't use it because of all the security issues that they have to fix with it.
Yeah, right. All right, any other opinions, Jacob, at all?
I could say one thing, the Pocket Weather would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great app, by the way, that app, Pocket Weather. Great app, and if you're in Australia, get it. And it's very cool. Great, looks great on the iPad Pro. And what's that, mate?
Did they port it for the US?
I think it's only for Australia.
That would be cool if they ported
it. I tried to add your weather onto it. They wouldn't let me, so it's only for Australia.
Well, if the Pocket Weather people made one for the US.
Well, then tell them.
I'll tell them after the show.
Tell them now. Tell them why in the podcast. They do listen to the podcast, apparently.
Yeah, it would be a good idea to have a US version or have one for all countries like UK, everywhere.
All right, good stuff, Jacob. Let's go to Daryl. What's your view on them stories, mate?
Get Pocket Weather if you're wanting a good Pocket Weather app.
Yep.
The software, the USB-C, Jacob's right in the sense that when you're at the bleeding edge and you're using sort of the real latest technology, and they haven't actually set out standards for it, then you do risk either whether it's a malware attack or you get substandard cables that damage your system. So it's good that that Google engineer actually went out there, and I remember reading about it. He fried his Pixel, which is worth about $1,500. So he certainly wasn't happy, and he went out and tested a lot of Amazon cables and forced Amazon basically to pull all these cables off. So I think sometimes, as much as we love our technology, sometimes it's better just to wait a little bit before being at the bleeding edge, unless you don't mind having a computer blown up or something like that. The Safari technology browser for web developers is good because it allows the developers to firstly get an opportunity to see what Apple is up to, so app developers and those sorts of people, so they're not sort of rushing to make changes or add functionality. And it means they've got a sandbox that they can play in, and make sure that the app, you know, has less bugs in it, so that hopefully when you and I get to use the app, we're not complaining about bugs being in the app. So, and I think, and also that means that Apple are really interested in making sure that apps don't have bugs, because in the end, Apple's reputation gets damaged as well as the developer's reputation if you get an iOS app or a Mac app and it's, yep, it breaks your system. So being able to sort of play in that sandbox, test out what Apple's is going to roll out to everybody beforehand, hopefully means the developers can squash the bugs and also, you know, get to add functionality, new functionality to their apps much quicker, because they can get the tested in there and make sure it actually works and then roll it out much quicker. And the iOS bug, yeah, it looks like, as Jacob said, a man in the middle type attack where, you know, they, I mean, there's a lot that has to go on. I mean, someone has to actually physically set up a Wi-Fi network. They have to have a server which you connect to, which then obviously triggers your iOS device to sync to the 1970 or actually 1969 date, and then it crashes. So there's quite a bit involved. Someone really has to, it's not, you know, but yeah, hopefully Apple will soon fix that. They obviously fixed it in the sense that if you deliberately tried to swap the date to 1970, it wouldn't brick your phone. But they obviously at the time didn't think about the fact that of a man in the middle Wi-Fi type attack. And I'm sure there'll be a patch coming out very soon to fix that one. But it still does take a bit of effort on behalf of the attacker. I mean, you've got to have a server, you've got to set up a Wi-Fi network, and you've got to sucker people into doing it. So I don't know how common this attack will be, but still, it's just another lesson for people when you're out there in the wild. Be careful when you're connecting to open Wi-Fi networks. You know, have a bit of an idea what that network is before you connect to it, because you know, you never know. It could be someone that's got malware on it, or it could be someone that's wanting to brick your phone.
Exactly.
That's my thoughts.
Good answer, Daryl. And also just a shout-out to Vincent Brown. I've actually mentioned this in the podcast. He actually put me on to the Pocket Weather update.
Ah, good.
If I did not know about that, I wouldn't have got the app. But, yeah, great update. Great update. Apparently it's been a long time since that app has been updated, apparently.
Oh, good. Good it so, hasn't died. Yeah.
So great update. And thanks to Vincent Brown for letting me know about that. Well, actually, he didn't let me know. I was sent on Twitter, but anyway, thanks to him. Let's go to Alice as a guest as well today. And John, Alice, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And tell us about what you do.
So I'm a brand marketer and brand blogger, and I blog at my own website, thrillofthechases.com, which is kind of a play on our family last name. And it just follows the adventures in tech, automotive, and travel. And then we also do live video consulting. Nice. With different companies. Yes.
Oh, good stuff. How long have you been doing that for?
Well, here in the US, live video has really taken off just about a year ago. And we were early to get in on that. And so that's really just taken off within the last year.
Yeah, right. And what sort of live streaming apps are you, like Snapchat or Periscope or?
Periscope. We were highly involved with the first two Periscope community summits here in the U.S., one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. And then we're also, with the launch of Facebook Live, we've been doing a lot with that as well.
Oh, nice one. Good stuff. And are you an Apple user, Alice?
Apple, yes.
So you use Apple, iPhone and that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Cool. All right, good stuff. Daryl, any questions for Alice?
Yeah, with the advent of Facebook's live video now, and I had a chance to play with it a couple of weeks ago when we got a free data day here in Australia, what if, you know, people are running their own Facebook pages for businesses and stuff like that, do you have any sort of advice on how they could use live video streaming to sort of enhance their business or their marketing?
Sure, absolutely. Depending on what it is that they're doing, events is another really great way to do that. The only thing that I would be aware of, if you're running a group or a page, anyone who has access, who is part of that group or page, unless you've gone in to change your settings, they can post live videos on your page as well.
Ah, that's a good point. So if you've got a lot of members that you've given admin access to, you need, right. you need to be a bit careful.
Right. So you need to go in to limit that to where you're moderating all video, or you know, or just be aware of that. You know, maybe that's something that is your strategy.
Yes, because I was thinking, because where I work, we're an adult education center, and I've been trying to rack my brains thinking, how could we use, you know, Facebook Live video, you know, as a marketing tool and as also a tool to engage people.
Oh, absolutely. One of the someone that I know, he runs a radio, he's a DJ, and he has had incredible success just with on one weekly night doing a live streaming one of his shows, and the interaction that he's been getting in viewership is incredible. I really think you could find some interest, and one of the greatest things is finding new people who are interested in what you're doing.
Yeah, it's been an interesting, because we've discussed on other episodes how, you know, Facebook sort of really, you know, is pushing out live video, and in a way have sort of gazumped Google, who, although yes, they have you know, they have Hangouts on Air, you're still unable to launch any sort of Hangout on Air live via an app, which seems to have, you know, Facebook seems to have jumped over Google in this.
Right. No, I agree completely. And the greatest thing about it is that it is, you know, they're pushing that right now, so they're giving a lot more eyes and attention to it. And I think now is definitely the time to take advantage of that.
Excellent. And do you have any other tips for you know, people who are starting up a Facebook page for a business, and they're sort of new and have got only a few, you know, people have liked it? Have you got any sort of tips that they can sort of, you know, generate some traffic through their site?
I would definitely say to engagement is always the key. Make sure that you're following up with those who are commenting and liking in those different broadcasts, and promote when you're going to go live, promote that throughout all of your other channels as well.
Ah, good. Yes. No, it's because it's always the thing that, you know, create a Facebook page or do something and then it's there. But then it's that initial spurt, if you like, to get enough people in it to start, then it starts generating its own interest. But it's getting that over those first, you know, few likes, if you like.
Right. I think with it being live, people are more, it's just the visual aspect of it. People are more likely to listen to what you're doing while they're doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I sort of think here in Australia with our sort of clunky internet, I mean, at the moment, live can be problematic, because sometimes I certainly don't have the bandwidth at times to stream live on Wi-Fi. I have to then go into the mobile network, and of course that comes with horrendous charges if you go over your allowance. But yeah, if we can get our internet sorted here, it'll certainly be. And you've got so many more people on Facebook that you can engage with. I just think that it certainly seems to be the way Facebook are going.
Right, absolutely. Well, and the ability for your current audience to share your video and what you're doing with their networks, yep. it's just the possibilities are endless.
Yep, and I certainly think that it's been a missed opportunity by Google being so slow to allow people to do the same sort of things via and the fact that Google have YouTube sitting there, which is a massive resource, and yet they've been very slow to get out a sort of a live streaming app version.
Right, absolutely. I agree completely.
I thought they might have actually, in the early days, you know, bought maybe Mia Cat or something like that and integrated it into their live offerings, but no, they haven't. But apparently the rumour is that they're going to bring out their own live streaming app. That's the
yeah, what is happening with Meerkat, Daryl or Alice? Are they closing down, or are they redoing things?
I think the term that they've thrown out is that they're pivoting, but that equates to me that yes, that they're
they've pretty much shut down the live streaming portion of what they're doing.
Oh, really? Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I think they got squashed with Periscope because, yeah. I mean, you know, Periscope being owned by Twitter, you know, would have been, you know, I mean, they can leverage Twitter, of course, and whereas Meerkat was sort of left as a, you know, it was just at the wrong place at the wrong time, I think. And now, with, of course, with Facebook's live service, that's just another competitor for the likes of, and it'll be interesting to see how Periscope deals with Facebook Live or whether the two can just coexist.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's go to Jacob. Any questions for Alex, Jacob?
Well, you said traveling. At any point, have you traveled anywhere? Like for old other social media events?
I travel a lot for conferences, and then, like I said, last year when we were doing Periscope, building the community with Periscope, the two summits that we did one in New York and then one in San Francisco, and so I did a lot of traveling last year. I've also done traveling with brands, any automotive launches, I'll travel with them, and then some travel resorts, we do that also.
That's cool. What about Australia? Yeah. Anything with Australia? Have you done anything for Australia? Anything with Australia at all?
You know, I haven't been able to come to Australia, but through Periscope, I have several people in Australia that I've connected with as friends. And so I'm looking forward to putting that on the agenda soon.
Oh, sounds good, Alice. John, any questions for Alice?
No, I think Facebook Live is an interesting phenomenon. And I'm interested to see if people kind of if the engagement picks up and it becomes a strong social channel and, you know, all the promoters and content producers jump on it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Go ahead, Jacob. What did you want to say, mate? You just made a weird noise.
Because I was jumped.
Ask the question.
Okay. So have you worked with Blab at all?
I know a lot of the people at Blab, and I've done a few Blab shows and interviews, but as far as partnering with them, I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
What do you think of Blab, Alice? Do you think it's a good platform, and what do you think of it?
I absolutely love the format. I was on there at the early inception, and I think it definitely needs to continue to expand its user base to stay relevant.
Okay.
Yeah, have more than four windows. Yeah, with Skype you can have up to 10.
Yeah, 10. I would never use Hangouts again because that's really bad. The other day I was going to Hangout the other day. It was just terrible. Yeah, you couldn't even talk.
I'll add in something with that.
I mentioned that, Jacob, who it was. But I'm not going to be using Hangouts again.
No, not that.
You couldn't get a word in edgewise, you know, because it's just so noisy and loud and stuff. And, yeah, go ahead, Jacob.
What I was saying was Google Hangouts like messing with your mic and stuff.
Yeah, they do.
Yep. Like, it just changes it. There's no way to stop it from changing your mic. Like, if you're streaming something and you're playing music, all of a sudden I did a test. It goes down to zero, and slowly goes back, and goes in an erratic motion.
I think Google's got the fear of God of copyright, and so a lot of times, you know, particularly with their live offering, any attempt, even if you own the music, any attempt to be sort of playing background music, and it will trigger it to sort of shut the music down or. Yep. Or shut your microphone down, and it's the same argument that I've heard from some of the gamers on a slightly different tack who use Twitch, and they won't go to Google to YouTube Live Gaming because of the restrictions that Google has, copyright restrictions, and the fact that if you're playing a game in streaming and there's a bit of in-game music, you can end up even if that music is public, you can end up getting a strike against your YouTube channel because of the whether it's the algorithms or the content ID triggers, and so your YouTube channel can be struck, and if it's bad enough, your YouTube channel can be disabled. So a lot of the gamers I've sort of heard speaks say they're going to stay with Twitch, but I'm sorry, I've digressed a bit onto a slightly different issue. But yeah, I think that's the problem with Hangouts is Google hasn't balanced the rights of the copyright holders with the use of everybody else, and I think that's going to unless they do that, I think Facebook and them are just going to gazump them with live offerings.
Yep. Definitely. And Alice, where can they get hold of you if they want to ask you more questions? Thanks for being on the podcast, by the way. Appreciate your time.
Oh, absolutely. Probably you can find me at Twitter. DM me on Twitter at the number 6 Chases.
Yep.
Is the easiest way to reach me. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Alice, for being on. Do you want to hang around or do you need to go?
I can hang around for a minute.
All right, cool. Good for you to hang around. Let's go to John. John, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me.
And tell us about what you do.
Well, I'm a product manager for Acquia, and I manage a product called Lightning, which is an enterprise authoring distribution of Drupal. I also am program manager for the Drupal 8 module acceleration program. It's accelerating modules being ported from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8, which is the latest release version of Drupal.
Oh, nice one. Okay. Any questions, Jacob?
For people that don't know what Drupal is, can you elaborate?
Sure thing. So Drupal is a content management system. I think probably more people have actually used something like WordPress than Drupal. And if you're building websites now, you might end up building on a platform like Squarespace or Wix. And you can think of them as really light versions of what Drupal can be. So companies that need hundreds of websites or need thousands of pieces of content and need to have structured content and have lots of authors and have workflows, and so that you can put content through stages where it can be approved, and you can preview content, in whether that be for a campaign or scheduled publishing or a new layout or a landing page, and then also add media like social media posts and digital asset management systems can be plugged in. I think Drupal, the really great thing about Drupal is that it integrates into nearly all of the other tools online. So if you have, social media marketing tools, or you've got email marketing tools, there's a classic line in Drupal, actually. There's a module for that. and that's because Drupal has a huge ecosystem of modules. There are about 35,000 active developers of Drupal, and a huge number of them build out the kind of over 40,000 active modules out there. In the program, we identified 50 of the top modules that are really key functionality for Drupal, and we accelerated them. But right now, there's a huge number of people in the community also porting all of those other modular functionalities for Drupal that make it great.
All right, good stuff, John. Daryl, any questions for John?
I've used content management systems a long time ago in a day, like ones like Mambo. I don't know if you remember Mambo. Was one, and I was trying to think while you were answering the question of a couple of others that I've sort of played around with, and also in the learning management sphere, Moodle, I've had a play around with. With the way technology is marching on so quickly, what are some of the issues that, like, trying to keep sort of like Drupal up to date with the latest things so that your clients can, embed stuff or add new functionality and tools? What are some of the issues that sort of face you on your day-to-day workload?
Sure thing. So there's a couple of really interesting broad concepts we've been thinking about recently. We implemented a technology in Drupal 8 called BigPipe. It's actually a Facebook concept. And what it allows you to do is load dynamic pages really quickly.
Yep.
So if you've ever kind of gone to a page that's loading up a lot of dynamic content, you might find the page just takes a long time before you can see anything. That's really frustrating.
Basically, what BigPipe, the concept, does is allows the page to load all of the static cacheable items first and then loads up the dynamic data last. So you can actually kind of see most of the page and read it, yep, and you know have your experience start and then have the rest of the information load. And that's actually really sophisticated to implement, but we've implemented it generally for Drupal so that everyone using Drupal, and there's over a million sites on Drupal, I think it runs about 3% of the web, can actually use, you know, that kind of cutting edge technology, you know, and that's available in Drupal 8. One of the other really interesting concepts I've been working with recently also is the kind of the rise of JavaScript, because as you probably all know, I mean, for anyone who's kind of been in web development, JavaScript's been around for a long time, and you know, kind of back in the days when it was just people bouncing balls around on screens, it kind of looked like a toy. But these days, you know, the biggest companies in the world, like like Google and Facebook, are building large frameworks in JavaScript that do really interesting, you know, really interesting for web developers building interactive experiences. So, you know, Google is building a framework called Angular, and Facebook builds React JS, and there's another open source one called Ember.js. All those are open source, slightly different licenses. But the point is that, you know, web developers these days want to create application-like experiences on the web. And that's really facilitated by the integration of those frameworks. So what we've been doing with Drupal is actually we've been working with the core teams, the Angular team and the Ember team, to come up with you know, ways that developers can tightly integrate the JavaScript experience with Drupal. And that means that you can still kind of have all the power of Drupal, or the authoring capability, and you know, all of the content management capability we've had, but also be able to create these rich end user experiences in JavaScript, and you know, have that content available, and be able to use technologies like BigPipe in that experience. And ultimately, something that I've been doing is working with my team, you know, with the distribution of Drupal that we've been building, Lightning, to enable site builders to be able to assemble JavaScript experiences. So JavaScript developers can create components, and then site builders can place them in a page. You know, so kind of the idea of a site builder is they're a slightly technical person who doesn't do any coding, but understands the system somewhat, and kind of enabling that user to create JavaScript experiences is pretty unique in the world.
So with, for those that are unfamiliar with sort of Drupal, is it something that, you know, whether you're a large enterprise wanting to roll out, you know, masses of Drupal, like, you know, your big blogging site or something, and you want to have, or you're just the sort of the one-man band or one-woman band, and you want to set up a website with content management, it's very scalable?
Absolutely. You know, I a while ago now, I had my own Drupal development company, and we did sites for relatively small businesses, and then some larger businesses.
Yep.
But you know, the customers of my company, and you know, since I joined Arcari a couple of years ago, and actually was in another Drupal company before that, I've sold to some of the biggest companies in the world. So, you know, we worked with the BBC to launch their BBC Store, which has all of their digital content available. It's like their own iTunes store over in the UK. So you can buy Doctor Who through their store, and that's on Drupal. And you know, there's NBC hosted the Olympics on Drupal, and there's you know, Warner Music and Pfizer and many others who have thousands of sites running on Drupal, and scale them up to hundreds of millions of hits a day. You know, one of Acquia's larger clients, you know, weather.com experiences huge spikes in their traffic as weather systems come through, and Drupal is able to support that, and Acquia is able to support Drupal through its infrastructure.
So really, a lot for the end user who's surfing the web or something, they've probably used and accessed Drupal a lot of times, but they probably were never aware of it.
Absolutely. Everyone's used Drupal. Everyone who's been online has used Drupal.
Because it's not
Netflix,
like,
use Drupal? Does Netflix use Drupal?
No, they've potentially got some properties, but you know, if you're using Netflix generally, you know, I think that they've built their own kind of web app in front.
Oh, nice one. Okay, Jacob, any questions, Jacob, before we wrap up, mate? Because we need to wrap up in about 5 minutes, mate. So go ahead.
a quick one.
Go ahead, mate.
And you were saying, talking about lightning. Same question I asked earlier. Could you care to elaborate on that one?
Sure thing. So, sorry, I cut out there for a second. I think in the past, people have kind of explained Drupal like it was a box of Lego pieces. You know, if you think of the module ecosystem around Drupal, what it enabled web developers to do is take Drupal as its small core Drupal, you know, so the core functionality, and then add modules to that to create a full experience. And, you know, what Lightning does is it takes a group of modules that we think should be tightly coupled for every, you know, every enterprise who needs to do authoring. So it's sites that have multiple authors and have sophisticated workflows and need media integration and need preview. It brings those modules together in a configuration that really enables developers to cut down on development time in Drupal 8. So, you know, we think it's a great framework to get going on Drupal 8. It's a way to kickstart your kind of learning and development in Drupal 8. It should also scale up to the largest projects. It acts as a framework, and it's opinionated enough to give you the functionality, but it actually is also unopinionated enough that you're not going to have to undo any configuration. So it's really about enterprise authoring, and it gives end users an experience that is much simpler when they're creating content and when they're creating landing pages and integrating media from YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, things like that.
All right, good stuff, mate. Alice, any questions for John?
No, I think it's fascinating. It's definitely made me more interested in it, and something that as we work with different companies, it'll definitely be a recommendation that I'll be making to them.
Thanks, Alice.
All right, good stuff. John, and where can they get hold of you if they have any more questions for you?
So I'm Commerce John on Twitter. That's a great way to get a hold of me.
Yep, definitely.
Yep.
All right. Did you enjoy the being on the podcast, mate?
Yeah, it was great. It's great to hear some Australian accents too. I live over in Boston, so it's always nice to talk to people at home.
Because you're actually from Australia, right?
I'm from Brisbane. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice one. How long have you been in the USA for?
I've only been here since October, but I was living over in the UK for 3 years before that.
Oh,
and yeah.
Very cool. Good on you, mate. Daryl, what's your view on that and final view of the podcast?
Yeah,
mate?
Look, it's great to have Alice on the podcast, and I like the social media angles and using, you know, live video streaming. I think that's the way to go. And also having used older content management systems like Mambo and that way back in the day, it's nice to sort of, you know, I haven't been in content management for a long time, and it's nice to see that products like, I can remember Drupal, and it's nice to see that it's really forging ahead, because if you're a web development, you know, everybody needs to be on the web. Companies need to have a web presence, and they need to have something. And it's not just a matter of throwing up any old website these days. You need to have something that brings people to your site and you engage with. So that's great.
Definitely, I agree.
I enjoyed it.
And where can they get hold of you, mate?
Twitter at Learnscape. You can get hold of me. The joke's wearing thin, but I'm still on. I'm still on Google+. Doing a.
Say the joke, mate.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I'll be the last person. I'll shut the door and switch the light off when I leave. But I'm still on Google+, and seriously, there is still some engagement, and it's quite a good. For those other people who are listening who are podcasters out there, as well, there's quite a good podcasting community.
Oh, there is, definitely.
On there, where they've got like a community where if you're into the tech side of podcasting, you want to know things about what's good microphones, good audio setups, all that sort of stuff there.
Yep.
So there is still some good stuff. But yeah, I know I'm probably wearing that joke a bit thin now, but that's where you can find me.
That was quite funny. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Olden at Tech Webcast. Jacob Jones, what about you? Was that funny to you?
I'm still on Google+.
Do you still use it?
No.
I don't use it that much anymore.
I just use it from a plugin to share the butcher of my Twitter.
Okay. Where can I get a hold of you, mate?
At jazzbot32669-1z.
All right, good stuff, buddy. And Alice, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at @6 and then Chases.
Okay, good stuff. And what about Snapchat?
Snapchat, I'm Alice Chase on Snapchat.
All right, cool. All right, Daryl, did you use Snapchat?
I've got it, but I've never actually really got into it. I mean, I'm probably the last person, but I just find the interface not intuitive and that. I just haven't really got into it. I'm probably too old and grumpy to use it, but I will give it a bit more of a try. But I have had an account for a long time, but I just, I don't know, I just haven't
I just find it really interesting how it's taken off now over the past year or so. And
it has. It's got really big. I was thinking, it'll be this one-day wonder that, you know. But I guess it's the fact that we've talked about video and living. It's the fact that you can do a video and after so long it disappears. So there's not the fear that if you, like, for example, if you do something a bit silly and you put it on Facebook, that an employer in a year's time is going to be trawling through Facebook and say, I saw that video of you lying in the gutter after a night out at the pub. Sorry about that job. So I guess in a way, particularly for the youngest generations who've just grown up with social media and that, they're aware of that now, and perhaps Snapchat, with the fact that the video just comes and goes, means that they feel a lot more comfortable using that rather than sometimes using Facebook. I don't know. I'm old.
Definitely. All right. Thanks, Daryl, for being on. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks for being on. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on. Thank you to John for being on, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
And thanks to Jacob. You can say something funny now, Jacob, at the end of the podcast. Actually, hang on. Before we go, we have to mention Paul's app. Daryl, mention Paul Carey.
Oh, yes, Paul Carey, and he's got his app is, now what's it called again? Alley Cat. He's got his Alley Cat app, so the game app, and he's kindly supported Tech Webcast. So by all means, if you're looking for a fun game to play, and of course everybody loves cats. You've only got to go to Google Plus to see all the cat pictures that flooded. So everyone loves cats, and add cats with games, and I think you've got a winner.
That's it. And on that note, I'm out of here. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Paul Carey from Carey Co. Check out our latest game release, Alley Cat, on iOS and Android. And check out our website at kerryco.net. Now I hand you back to Brad and the team at Tech Webcast.
Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Because technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast. Ha! Tech Webcast. Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer! Boom!